We are back for the 234th time, and for good news, it's all so tiring. It was also tiring last week. I'm less tired. I feel less tired this week. 234 times. You know what? I think I'm justified in sometimes just being just so tired of it all. I'm less tired this week. We're going to be a little more upbeat, I think. I think we still had a great show last week. Hopefully so. Hopefully if everybody didn't like nobody's listening this week, because after last week's show, that sucked. I ain't. If you're a new listener, hey, I'm glad you're here. We have a lot of fun with this show. Roughly the halfway point, we do have a Christian-specific segment. Stick around for that, even if you're a non-believer. You're still invited to stick around for it. I think you'll get something. I hope you get something out of it. Maybe. It's the best part of the show. If you skip this Christian-specific segment, you're really skipping the whole point of the show. But that's up to you. If you're 100% bona fide, dedicated, evangelical, atheist spurg, you may not like it. And that's why I warn you, so that you don't have to be triggered. This show, by the way, is as good as it gets. There's nothing behind a paywall. I don't have anything like you have to pay for to get. What you see is what you get, and it's all free. It's my gift to you. But if you do get something out of it, I do ask that you put a little something in the plate. That's right. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We pass the offering plate around. It's easy. Go to the description page here on Radio Albion. I've got snail mail right there. Bitcoin, Monero. Got email address for your notes. If you've got another cryptocurrency, by all means, drop me an email. I can get you an address for that. I'm not proud. Don't be embarrassed to say, will you take my shitcoin? Because I will. I got no pride. I will totally take your shitcoins because I take what I can get. And it is all very much appreciated. You get to be. Here's the thing. If you put something in the plate, you get to be part of the elite. See, because like the vast majority of people never send anything. So you, if you want to be a part of the elite at the Parish of the Patriots, drop a little something in the plate. I'll appreciate it. Trust me. Let's go to the listener supporter mailbag. If you're a new listener, by the way, you'll also be relieved to know I don't spend a lot of time like pay me money, send me money, send me. I really don't do that. I do try to keep it lighthearted. Listener supporter mailbag, GPD, and Mr. T, this is from Mr. T. GPD, I'm hoping Russia nukes the U.S. I know that feeling. But if that were to happen, you can rest assured that, how should we say, it will be instigated. It won't just be out of the blue. I was thinking of this, you know, most of you are probably familiar that Israel, you know, which doesn't even admit having nuclear weapons, actually does have them and doesn't have any official agreements because they don't even admit they have them. And they have what is called the Samson auction. They're going to auction off Samson. No, they have the Samson option, you know, and most of you are probably familiar with that, where they would basically just take out nuke everybody if, you know, their little crimed in, if whatever you want to call their state in the Middle East is ever actually threatened. They do the Samson option. Why then the whole U.S. thing, if the U.S. golem is threatened, why would the Samson option just be limited to Israel? I mean, that's the real danger, because the U.S. is losing its hegemony. It's losing its ability to bully everybody on the planet. You're seeing that fall apart in real time. And the question is, how does that play out? And the question is, are these people going to do the Samson option from the U.S. and just start nuking everyone on the planet to try to hold on to the ability to this level of control? I don't know. I don't know what the odds are. They're not zero, which is kind of concerning, to say the least. Next up, dear GPD, thanks for keeping the truth alive and Radio Albion on the air. Your podcasts are a lifeline for many people around the world, and that is from Holland. And I don't know how common your first name even is, so I just leave that off, but I would let you know that I did get this, and I did also pass your other note on to Dr. Johnson. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for your kind words. Very, very much appreciated. Oh, and by the way, your ones look like a seven. I don't know when you sent those out. But I could tell by the scribbling on the envelope that it got sent. Your ones look like a seven. I think it got sent to the box ending in a seven instead of. Anyway, it is appreciated and it did get to me. So don't worry. Thank you very much. Hey, GPD, August has been pretty crazy for me. I hate to admit it, but I've fallen a bit behind on latest episodes. Y'all can't fight. That's one of the great things. I got to stop here. It's one of the great things about this format that we use, you know, this whole podcasting thing. You know, I remember back in the day, like, you know, like when I was a kid, I didn't have all this because when I was a kid, we didn't even have VCRs. Most of y'all probably don't even know what a VCR is anymore. We didn't even have VCR. So if you missed a TV show or radio program or whatever the hell, you got love. You just missed it. If you didn't, if you were at work and you can't tune in to Paul Harvey in the morning, you just miss Paul Harvey. That's just the end of it. You don't get to listen to Paul Harvey no more. Paul Harvey. Good day. See, you got to be old to know about Paul Harvey. Now, see, you can go back and listen anytime. You can download it and listen while you're working in the yard. That's one of the things I think is really great. I do. I got to stop and say, I really do appreciate, and I know I say this a lot, but I don't want it to come off as empty. Because, look, I know there's at least 6 million podcasts out there you could be listening to. There's podcasters that get paid a lot of money and they're the quote unquote number one podcaster out there. And between them and there's a jillions and jillions, kajillions of podcasting out there. You know, it's hard to wade through it all. But for whatever reason, all of y'all have wound up here. Whether you've given this a listen to the first time, I hope it meets your expectations. Or for goodness sakes, if you've been with us for 234 installments, however long you've been here, I really do appreciate it because there's a lot of competition. There's a lot of other people and a lot of other people are doing really good stuff too. I don't put nobody, you know, I don't put anybody down. But I am humbled. I really am that y'all tune in every week. I really mean that. Now, back to the point, I think it is really awesome that, you know, a body can download and listen whenever, because I do that. You know, now that I'm putting Dr. Johnson's show, I get Dr. Johnson's show put on the network for him. You see, one of the advantages and one of the payoffs for me, like if I'm busy around the house, you know, like the other day, I was busy on a Wednesday around the house. And it's like, hey, I want to check out Dr. Johnson's Thursday installment of the Daily Nationalist. You know what? I can do it right then. I don't have to wait for it to come out. I'm ahead of the rest of y'all. But it is cool. It is cool because you can go back and listen to them at your leisure. When you get a chance, like if I got to take a trip, I'll download some shows and, you know, and take that trip. And I do, I think is one of the cool things that we do. We can get caught up like that. Anyway, let's see here. Where are we at here? Oh, yes. There's more to this note. I just got sidetracked like always. So without knowing for sure, I hope all is well with you and your family, and I hope Sven is hanging in there. Thank you for your continued hard work and dedication. I truly appreciate it. I'll get caught up on episodes soon, and that's from Drew. Appreciate it. Last I've heard, Sven is hanging in there. You know, all things considered, if I lived closer, I'd go visit, you know, go have visitation and sit down and really be visiting, but it's not going to be possible, not practical. For yours truly, hell, they probably wouldn't even let me go there. I'd probably show up at the airport and they'd be like there to meet me. Straight up, I'm probably on some kind of government don't fly list, and I don't even know because I don't fly. But as far as I know, he is hanging in there, and I continue to write to him, and you know, it sounds like he's still doing. Like I say, I mean, he's still locked up. You know, he's doing as well as could be hoped for, but we still continue to look forward to the day he gets out. You know, not just because it'll be less work for me, but because, of course, obviously my friend won't be in jail for some BS charges anymore. And finally, Grandpa Dan, and this is a reference to last week's show. I too liked the song. It's easy to analyze and find faults. and especially criticize Anthony Oliver for recent pro-diversity statements he made and accuse him of being co-opted by the establishment, which he may end up actually doing. Like you say, the guy's really struck a chord amongst those who oppose the WEF plan of owning nothing, eating bugs, and being happy in your virtual world, even and especially if they cannot articulate it like you can. Love and blessings of Christ. And that's from Jay. And I really appreciate you bringing this because I really wanted to get to that. And I thought I had to have an excuse. I didn't want to beat the dead horse because I've seen a lot of that as well. And after recording last week's show, I've seen a lot of this all over the internet. People, you know, criticizing this guy. And I thought, you know, I'm gonna probably catch some negativity over that deal. So I do appreciate you bringing it. And my response to this, you know, to when people, you know, if anybody's sitting there going, man, I can't believe you know, this guy. And you should have the same response to this anytime something like this come up. And that is, bro, it's just a song. I've read everything from this guy is AstroTurf and this whole thing is, and it may be, I just like the song. Now, I've never understood, and maybe this is a fault of me, but I don't think it is. But I've never been able to understand this inability to just like a song, and that doesn't have to have anything to do personally with the person singing it, the person writing it, or whatever the case may be. I mean, just as an example, without really knowing the specifics, it's a safe assumption 100% that, for instance, Willie Nelson's political views are probably not exactly aligned with my own. That having said, his rendition of My Heroes Have Always Been Cowboys, if you've ever known an old cowboy that basically reached the end of the line, the end of the trail, that song will bring a tear to your eye. I'm going to try to remember to put a link in the description of a good, because there's versions, or there used to be, I got to look and check, where people put cool slideshows of old pictures and stuff. But it's a great song. I love the song. I don't care. If you've ever known an old cowboy who's out at the end of the trail or reached the end of the trail, that song will make you cry. I don't care about his political views. I don't care who wrote the song, what their political views. This is why I put this under the category. This is why we can't have nice things. This is why we can't have nice things. If you're going to have this 100%, like, I don't know, puritanical view of you can't separate, you know, well, that person's politics. It's just a song. Just song, bro. I like the song. And even if the guy is 100% AstroTurfed and this is some sort of thing that's been put up, you know, I think one of the unintentional things they did is it's really highlighted, as the listeners pointed out here, as Jay has pointed out here, I'm sorry. You know, nobody wants this. This is what I said last week, and that was kind of the point. Nobody wants this. And this really lends the lie to this whole democracy system sham that they keep pulling on us. We're so poor. They tell us all the time, this is democracy. We got the democracy. This is the best, our democracy. Everything, anything that can be deemed a threat to our democracy values of who we are, you have got to be against it. And this sheds the big light, the light on the big lie of this, because nobody wants what they're cramming down our throats, except for maybe a few small percentage of screechers, which are amplified by the media. Nobody actually wants this bullshit. And they're doing it anyway. So what are we getting? What are we getting out of this? One of the things that's really hard to get past people, and we're out of the, we're segueing. I'm so smooth with this, y'all don't realize it. We're segueing right on out of the listener supporter mailbag, and we're keeping on going. One of the hard things to get past people is this idolatry they have for the system. This will tie into the Christian specific segment. But they idolize the democracy. Conservatives idolize the Constitution and the Founding Fathers as this, their holy things. The holy relic will keep us safe. It's a piece of paper and nobody cares. And they won't accept that reality. People idolize the system and they won't accept. The system is not malfunctioning. You see people talking all the time. It's like, we got to save America. We got to turn this thing around while we can. Turn it around. The system is working as designed. This is all a feature, not a bug. This is what it's supposed to do. What are you going to fix? There's nothing to fix it. You know what I'm saying? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. You're talking about a system that ain't broke, and you're talking about fixing it. You ain't going to fix it because it ain't broke. It's working as designed. It just don't work the way you want it to. You got the wrong system. The system's doing what it's designed to do, and it's doing it very well. It's just not designed to work the way you think it is. But you can't get people to understand that. No. We just need to vote for the Republicans harder. When I read somebody and they get to that, I stop reading. I don't know. I don't care what other points they got to make. If they're going to start shilling about, we just got to vote for better politicians, they don't understand. You know, I'm sorry. If they're not at that point. And what's funny about this is people actually long for the most natural form of government that comes to man, which is some form of monarchy. They really do. And people deny that. They say, no, I love the democracy, but they don't. The natural form of governance that men will gravitate to, have always gravitated to, have always basically, if given the choice, will implement, and that is some form of monarchy. They want to be ruled over by a king. They really do. And this is natural if you understand it from the natural order perspective of thing. You know, it's reflective of, from a Christian standpoint, our longing, you know, we ruled over by the ultimate king, the creator God. It's early for the preacher. I'm not doing that yet. But people long for monarchy. And I can prove this. Look at the way people in the U.S. handle the presidential election. You know, technically, the president is just supposed to be like, you know, administering how, you know, these different departments of the government. And yet, how are these elections treated? They act like they're voting for a king. Well, if we vote for this guy, he's going to do this. He's going to do that. He's going to this. And it doesn't matter that they're not going to do that. It doesn't matter that even if they wanted to do that, which they probably don't, they couldn't do that. But how do people... You'll hear Republicans, if we just get Biden out of here, everything will turn around, as if Biden is the king. The problem is we have the wrong king. We need a different king. They long for monarchy. This is the natural form of government for man. It's some form of monarchy. And yet, people will continue to go on about, no, the democracy of freedom of values of who we are, whatever the hell is what we want. And yet every presidential election, everybody acts like they're, by golly, they're voting for the king for the next 4 years. This inability to accept that the system is working as designed, it leads to this huge denial. And the number one demographic that does this is may or may not surprise you, and that's these fervent Trump supporters. Look, I get it. I get it, but you got to accept reality. You know, I mean, you do. And it's if we get Trump back in there, if we could just get Trump back in there, what? I mean, you know, I can't speak to the man's personal motivations because I don't know what's in his heart. You know, I think he did have some good intentions when he went in in 2016. But you know, what did he accomplish? What was he able to accomplish? The system makes sure that all of that stays in balance. In other words, all of that works to the end design. There's systems in place to make sure that the will of the people isn't actually done. And what if they don't have anything new? We just got to get Trump back in there. And what? The problem's the system. The problem is the system itself. I think one of the reasons it's so shocking and in your face to people is because of Trump. Now, I'm giving credit where due. You see, this was supposed to be what you're seeing right now was supposed to have been spread out over 4 more years to make it less obvious. And it did throw a hiccup in all of that. So now they're taking what was supposed to have been spread out over, say, 8 years. And they had to cram it into 4 years, so it's a lot more in your face. You know, it's there. If you look back, all these people that were running back in 2016, they were talking about what a threat Russia was. That isn't by coincidence. It's not because they were prophets and they were so smart they could see that the evil modern day Hitler Vladimir Putin was planning to try to dominate the world narrative back then. It's just they already knew what the plan was. This is all theater. It's all a charade. I think one of the things that makes it so sorry is it was supposed to have been spread out so it wouldn't be so obvious. Speaking of Trump, of course, the big news this past week was this ridiculous. I mean, all these charges are absurd. If you go around the internet and read honest legal opinions, not shills for the government, not shills for the Justice Department, not shills for the Democrat Party, but actual like people who are being honest that are like legal experts. And they'll tell you all of these charges are made up. I mean, they're obviously BS. These charges in Georgia are the most BS charges of all, by the way. I mean, basically, they're trying to charge him with it's illegal to even question to contest the election. Now, those of us who were around when George W. Bush ran against Al Gore, you remember the hanging Chad fiasco in Florida, and both campaigns had teams of lawyers going in there and micromanaging vote counting. That election ultimately was decided by the Supreme Court because both sides were just fighting tooth and nail and contesting because the election was supposedly so close. These ridiculous charges in Georgia are saying all of that is illegal now. Dr. Johnson has pointed out, because he's older too, like me, and he remembers when, you know, you had election night. You had the presidential election, and you could stay up to around midnight, or if you didn't want to do that, you could just get up the next morning, pick up your newspaper, and you knew who won. This was back when they did manual vote counting. Well, now we have all of this electronic vote counting, and it's like a month later, and we can't tell you who won. And this is all supposed to be legit. Now, these Georgia charges are the most absurd. And they're making a big deal about Trump. You know, he got hauled in, arrested, and they took his mugshot. Once again, Trump handled this in an incorrect manner, in my professional opinion. What would GPD have done if I were Donald Trump? He posted his $200,000 bond, and he went back to New Jersey or wherever the hell. You see, what Trump should have done is he should have refused to post the bail. They hand this $200,000 bail out, which is a number they just pulled out of their ass. They throw this $200,000 bail out. Trump posts it and goes back to New Jersey. That's not what he should have done. If I was Trump, I would have refused to pay the bail. In fact, I probably would have refused to show up and made them come and get me. But even so, he shows up. They would have been like, okay, here's your mugshot. Ha, 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 we got you now. Now post your $200,000 bail. Nope. What do you mean no? No, I'm not posting bail. What are you going to do? Then this shines the absurdity of all of this, okay? They're acting as though they're going to put this man in prison. How's that work, by the way? Because he has Secret Service protection. So are you going to put him in a jail cell and the Secret Service agents are going to stand in the jail cell with him? How is that even going to work? See, I would have highlighted that. What he should have done is he should have refused to pay the bail, and that would have put everybody in the spot. The sheriff who's been going around going, well, we're following procedures, we're mugshotting me, I would have been like, well, I'm not posting bonds, so I guess you're going to follow procedure and put me in a jail cell. Oh, by the way, my Secret Service agents are going to have to be in here too, and they're armed. Oh, what's that? You can't bring weapons into a jail? Well, they're the Secret Service, and they have authority over you, so they're going to bring their guns into the jail. Now the sheriff's going, wait. I guarantee you within an hour they would have dropped all bail and told him get the hell out, which would have shown how utterly and absurdly ridiculous the whole thing is. How are you going to put somebody in jail? How are you, much less prison, who is assigned armed Secret Service detail? They show him going, showing up for this, and he's in a caravan. They're like a convoy of police cars and armed security. But what, they going to put him in prison? The whole thing is stupid. Of course, be that as it may, the lessons for you and me and the rest of us, and I, to take away the big lessons, is if they do this to him, What they going to do to you? The system, the legal system specifically in this country, is so far gone. I'm serious. Look, they can look at the way the January 6th people were treated. Look at the way the Charlottesville people were treated. Look at. Do you think you got a chance? I'm sorry. If you like sitting around watching Perry Mason reruns, that ain't the way the system works. Justice is far removed from the legal system in the U.S. and I would say in the West in general. They can put you up on whatever charges they want to. And you ain't rich. You ain't Donald Trump. You know what they're going to do? They're going to stack 6 million charges against you with a combined jail time of 15 times your life or whatever the hell. And when it comes down to it, because you can't afford no what it would cost you to get out of that or to fight it in court. So your shitty court appointed lawyer who doesn't want to be there anyway is going to say, well, I got you a good deal. You're going to plead guilty to these 7 charges and do 20 years. And that's the best you can hope for. Unless you're Hunter Biden, of course, and then they're going to give you a deal that doesn't involve jail time and you get lifetime immunity on anything else that comes. Justice Department prosecutor tries to give the guy a deal granting him lifetime immunity. And Trump, by the way, didn't bother issuing a blanket pardon for the January 6th people before he left office, which could have saved a whole lot of this headache. This is why I have very limited sympathy for Trump personally. Which is easy for me because I understand the whole system is a farce and I'm not going to give it legitimacy by voting. So you see, I can do these things. But the people who wish Trump were their king will sit there and say that if we get Trump back in there, the system is somehow going to magically be fixed. None of us have a chance in this legal system. And that's something that is really hard for white people to get through their head. You can be critical of black people. And the way they'll talk about the police and the court system and claim the reason so many black people are in jail is because of racism, which we know that's not the case. But they do have a point in that you don't have a chance in this system. If you get caught up in the system, it ain't about race. It's about the fact that you ain't got no money and you ain't nobody. You're going to jail. They're incorrect about the racial aspect of it. They're not picking on black people because they don't like the color of their skin. But they are picking on people. Like, if you get caught up in the system for whatever reason, you ain't got a chance. When you hear about somebody and they find out finally, begrudgingly, admittedly, that they put the wrong guy in prison, well, it wasn't because they're black. It's because they had no choice. They usually wind up copping some sort of plea deal. And I'll see naive white people comment on these things and say, well, then why the hell did this ignorant black man plead guilty in the first place? Because they stacked 800 charges on him and his crappy court-appointed attorney who didn't want to be there was like, well, they're offering you a plea deal on these 3. So go ahead and plead guilty because that's the best you're going to get. Otherwise, you're never going to get out of prison again in your life. And you know what? You're going to take the same damn deal. Because that's the way the system's rigged. The system is working as designed, folks. It's not a bug. It's not acting up. It doesn't need a tune-up. It's doing what it's designed to do. Maybe this isn't what it was originally intended to do. Don't get me started on the founding fathers and this whole ridiculous thing they got rolling with this. But nevertheless, this is the way the system in 2023 is designed to operate, and it's working like a well-oiled machine. We'll be talking about fixing it, tuning it up, tinkering with it, replacing a few parts, and everything will be fine. Because it's not. And yet, time again, I'm sorry. White people are way too naive about these things. I'm not talking about you. Y'all, but y'all know. I'm not like y'all. But you know what I'm talking about. Y'all feel me, right? Because you're like me. You deal with normies. You know? You deal with like, no, it's like a lot of the stuff, like, you know, people were pointing out, we were talking about earlier about the Arler Anthony stuff, you know, and it's like a lot of the stuff people are pointing to. I'm like, yeah, that's just normie tier conservative mindset. You know, if you deal with these people, that's the way they are. They'll sit there and that's about where they're at. But I will see these normie conservative type white people, and they still have this naive thing like the police are on their side and will stand up for them or something. Like, you know, if they get caught up in the legal system and they're innocent, all they have to do is go before the judge and the prosecutor and explain to them how they're innocent and how they absolutely would never do such a thing. This naivety is just, it's just breathtaking. You know, these people, if they got singled out falsely on charges, would wind up going in there and like spilling their guts in the interrogation room, thinking this is somehow going to help them. And that guy sitting there writing notes is looking for an excuse to let him go. No, he's looking for some way to trap you in the words you said to put your ass in prison. And heaven forbid, if the person you're dealing with isn't like your local police, if you're dealing with somebody from the federal government, if you're dealing with somebody from the FBI, it doesn't matter what you do. If they can find some way to make one of your statements contradict another statement, they got you on the charge of lying to the FBI. It doesn't matter. You're 100% being real. You're trying to be sincere. You're trying to explain the circumstances of the situation. But see, what you just said could be taken in a certain context to contradict something you said a while ago. And now they've got you on the charge of lying to the FBI. Bing bong. These people fall for that because they don't, they naively think they're going to go in there. If they get caught up in this system, they're going to go in there and explain themselves and they're going to go, oh, I understand. You're completely innocent. Thank you, Mr. Jones. You may go now. On this, black people are ahead of the curve. I'm sorry. You're going to have to accept that. The black guy that gets caught with the drugs in his pocket that sits there and goes, I don't know nothing about that, denies it to the end, even though it's obvious, he's at least more on the ball about how the system works than the guy who goes in there and says, I'm going to start spilling my guts because once I explain to them, they'll understand I'm innocent. They don't care if you're innocent. They're looking for a conviction. Then they can close the case. They don't care if they close the case on the guilty party. Get a freaking clue. And heaven forbid if you're talking to federal authorities, that's a whole nother game. Yeah, if you're talking to your local sheriff's department, I would still have a lawyer present myself. But yeah, you could probably explain yourself because at least you're not under the rules of if you happen to contradict yourself, now they can put you in prison for lying to the FBI because that's a whole nother tier thing. And these people will wander in there and spill their guts thinking they're going to understand me and let me go. No, they're not. They, as a matter of procedure, will lock you in that room for hours to make you more desperate to get out of that room, because then you're more likely to screw up and tell them something that they can use against you. Guilt or innocence don't have nothing to do with it. They, part of procedures to put you in there to make you feel like you're ready to do anything, get the hell out of here, which is a normal human reaction. It ain't about getting to the truth. It's about getting you to screw up so they can hang this on somebody, close the damn case, and move on to the next thing. Look, it's always a dangerous thing if you're not dealing with reality. Because if you deal with reality, you're going to be a lot more likely, I should say, to stay out of trouble. If you run around naive thinking the legal system has something to do with justice, while you look at what they're doing to Trump, and that's why I say the real lesson with Trump is to understand if they can do this, somebody rich and powerful like him, what chance do you got? If you don't deal with reality, you're going to get yourself in trouble. You have got to understand the way the world around you works, not the fantasy world to where my founding fathers and my constitution and my rights are somehow mean anything in today's America. Under this system, you're chasing a ghost, man. You got to deal with the reality, not what you wish things were be. I get into this with people all the time. We need to get into the Christian specifics. I need to wrap this up. But I'm kind of on a roll. You know, you get into this with people all the time. You get into a debate about this, and what you'll find if you're having this more or less this discussion with your normie conservative coworkers, friends, family members, whoever. What you will find is they're arguing with you about what they wish things were, not with what the reality is. No, but the Constitution's and the Founding Fathers. Look, the Founding Fathers said specifically, it doesn't matter. It says in the Constitution, you're right. Is that reality? They will wind up arguing with you with about their fantasy, about what they wish things were, because they just can't accept reality. And I'm going to tell you, if you can't accept reality, you're going to get into trouble. You're absolutely 100% going to get into trouble. Look, the system is so corrupt, you may get into trouble anyway. But at least you're going to be less likely. You're going to be less likely to get into trouble if you understand the world around you. These people that are wandering around in denial of reality, easy pickings. Easy pickings, man. They like babes in the woods, man. They just wandering around. I don't know, man. Wishing the best, but I hope all of y'all, hope you behave yourselves. Hope you understand reality in the world that we live in. We're going to have to, as I said, we got to get into the Christian specific segment. So, let's keep going. Like I say, if you're new, stick around for it. It might be better than what you think. Either way, y'all know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. You know, I can't stress enough the importance of trying to apply daily Bible reading as a part of your routine. And the earlier you can do this, the better off you are. Now, if you're late to the game, if you're later in life and coming to your faith, I mean, it is what it is. You've got to work with what you've got. But the more you can apply, like the sooner you can apply, if you can read the Bible every day and you know, get through the whole thing and read both the old and the new. I personally, at this stage of my life and at this stage of my faith, I alternate. I'll have a book in the Old Testament that I'm reading as well as a book in the New Testament. And needless to say, over the course of my life, I've been through the Bible. I don't know how many times if you added it all together, but it tended to be like in segments. I remember when I was younger, I did make it a point to start at Genesis and read all the way through Revelation. And, you know, that's all well and good. Most of it has been, though, reading, you know, like I'm doing right now. I'll focus on one book and then, you know, move to the next one. Like I say, currently right now, I have this routine of I've got two books right now. I'm in 2 Kings in the Old Testament, and I'm in 1 Corinthians in the New Testament. 1 Corinthians is an interesting thing because Paul is laying out a lot of practical application, real life. Look, you need to do things in this manner for the early churches. Now, some of it can kind of seem, I don't know, probably foreign to us as we wander through this horrible modern world that we're in. But if you get to the essence of it, it's not. It's very relevant today. One of the things he lays out, I believe in chapter 11, is this order between men and women and the hierarchy, as it were. He says the woman is subject to the man. The man is subject to Christ. Christ is subject to God or God the Father. You have that. You have to keep that order. And he stresses that order. Now, this is why it's important to get familiar with more of it. Because if you're not familiar with the rest of it, you're looking at that on its own and you miss a whole lot. He writes elsewhere that basically for someone, if you come to the faith, because he understood even at that time, people come to the faith from somewhere else. You know, they come to Jesus from somewhere else. And as such, they bring baggage with them. You know, they bring their circumstances with them. And he was very real about that. And he says, basically, if you come to the faith and you're married already and you're married to an unbeliever, you know, well, perhaps by the way you live your life. He says, women, if by the way you live your life is in following the way of the Lord, you might save your husband. You might bring faith to your husband. And because your husband might look at you and in the way you're living your life, and he might be put to shame by the way he's living his, and he might actually come to the faith. He might be sanctified by your faith, I believe is the way Paul puts it. But he also says, if you come to the faith and you're married to an unbeliever, and they're basically like, you're part of a weird cult, I ain't have nothing to do, and they leave you, he basically says, let them go. I mean, don't worry about it. You got to have your priorities. If they're like, I don't want anything to do with your Jesus nonsense, and I'm not going to be married to somebody like you, and they leave you, just basically just let them go. Now, this is why it's important to have a larger context. And that's why I say the more you can get familiar with all of these things, the more it's going to make sense, because it's written elsewhere. It's stressed, wives, submit to your husbands. Okay, well, if you're married to an unbeliever and he says, no, you can't go to church. No, I don't want you following in this Jesus nonsense. I don't want to hear anything about it. And they're going to try to block you from your relationship with Christ. But yeah, how are you going to submit to your husbands? You have to have that larger context to understand what he's saying. Now, let's say a woman is married, as just as an example, a woman is married to an unbeliever, and she goes to the church, even though her unbelieving husband doesn't want her to, but she still follows the faith and she goes to the church. This, you note in chapter 11, I believe it is, he says the woman is subject to the man. He doesn't say the husband. So you see, she's not in rebellion if she goes to the church, but yet she is still subject to the man. In other words, the men of the church. So she still follows the hierarchy when she goes to the church. And as far as the faith goes, the man is subject to Christ. The Christ is subject to God the Father. The order is maintained. Now, as I said, people come to the faith from somewhere else, but he also is, it's written elsewhere. He writes, the importance, it says, and many of you are familiar with how it is written, do not be yoked with unbelievers. If you are already in the faith, if you've already come to the Lord, don't get married to somebody who's a non-believer. Don't care how you feel, how they make your heart, doki doki, how they make your heart go doki doki. Don't marry... Don't marry an unbeliever. Don't be yoked to unbelievers if you're already in the faith. If you come to the faith and you're already married to an unbeliever, deal with that as you can. If they're fine with it and you can get along, they're not going to block you from the faith, I should say, then don't worry about it. But if they cast you out of their lives because of your faith, then let them go. Don't stress out of it. But if you're already in the faith, then don't, for goodness sakes, don't be yoked with an unbeliever, because they're going to try to draw you away from the faith. And this ties in with what the Old Testament says when they were warned, don't take these foreign wives. Don't have anything to do with these other people, because they're going to try to draw you away from the Lord and get you to following their other gods. And you start seeing how everything is related, how it all, the patterns are the same and everything ties in. You read these things and you realize how far away from the faith or the way things are supposed to be, modern quote unquote Christianity has become, how far from the original teachings. Time and time again, like for instance, Paul, he lays out, you've got these people that are doing these things in the church. And by the church, it means the community. It's more than just, back then the church was more than just, going to meeting up on Sunday for 30 minutes or an hour. It was more of a community. You've got people in your community, people in your church who are behaving this way. They're doing all these sinful things. They're leading people away from the faith with false doctrines and heresy. And time and again, he says, kick them out. When was the last time, I was thinking about that, when was the last time you ever heard of any modern day church telling somebody to get out, expelling somebody from the church? It's unheard of. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if you went down to one of your local churches, pick a congregation, you go down to the local church and maybe it's your first time there and you're like, I'm going to see what these guys are all about. And you go in there and you're sitting around and they're like, well, we've got some meat, we've got some business to take care of before we get into this week's sermon. And they point to this guy sitting in the pews and they're like, okay, you have been spreading rumors about everybody, constantly stirring up drama, gossiping, causing divisions in the church, you know, taking advantage of other people's generosity in the church and doing all of these sinful things. Now, what we need you to do is get your stuff and get the hell out and don't come back. You'd be blown away. You'd be like, whoa, this isn't what I was expecting to see. Yet, time and again, Paul instructs, that's what you got to do. Get up, kick them out. The modern church is defined by its tolerance. Yeah, I've gone on about this before. Jesus, we're supposed to model the behavior of Jesus, and Jesus was anything except tolerant. He was definitely not tolerant. And Paul writes time and again, take these people and kick them out. Don't have anything to do and cut out the cancer. You want to, it's like having cancer. You want to cut that cancer. You want to catch it out soon. You want to cut it out. Get it out before it can spread, before it can infect the other cells of your body. Modern church, but infected with tolerance. They tolerate everything. And you see this mess that we have today. We've talked a lot, you know, I know I've talked about this before, but man has this need for a relationship with the spiritual. And even, you see this even among non-believers. You have people now say, I'm agnostic, or I'm an atheist, and I don't believe in any, you know, any God. But they do. You see the pattern. You see this longing, this part of human nature to reach out to God, to reach out for a higher meaning. And what happens most of the time, if you really look close enough, when people, if somebody will say, you know, I don't believe in God, I'm an atheist, I'm agnostic or whatever, if you look close enough, you'll see actually they're idolaters. Of course, what is worse is so are most quote-unquote Christians in this world today. And again, this is reflected in the Old Testament when you would have, you know, people were at different stages of their relationship with God as a people, as a nation. They might be in complete rebellion and only chase after foreign gods. Or sometimes they kind of reel it back in and they would worship the Lord, but they would also have their altars and their high places for these false gods. They had also entertained their idolatry. And that is pretty much where we're at by and large in our society today. People will say they don't believe in God, but actually they're idolaters because they still go through what amounts to like religious routines. If you look at your most vocal and ardent leftists in this society today, is there any way to describe their actions, their behaviors, and their attitudes besides it is they act and behave, I'll get it spit out in a minute, with a religious fervor. They are evangelical about their faith, and they don't even understand that that is what it is. They're evangelical for their idols. Their idols just are false, so obviously, but they're evangelical about it. You'll see them. You'll see these people, and they'll basically prophesy for their false gods. They'll repeat. If they see somebody, if they see somebody doing something, for instance, their idol might be the state. Their idol is the state. And if they see somebody doing something against the rules, what will they say? That person's going to get themselves and a whole bunch of other people killed with their reckless behavior. Now, we know in the Old Testament, the prophets of God in the Old Testament, the prophets of the Lord simply repeated what God said to them. They would say, you have to understand, they weren't guessing. When the prophets of the Old Testament went and says, this is what the Lord said, they were repeating back what they literally heard a voice tell them. They were simply repeating back what they were told. And that's what these people do. They're going to go get themselves killed and a whole bunch of other people killed and everything else. Well, where did you hear that? Well, the media told me. The government told me. They're prophets for their idol. They're repeating back what they were told. Just like there's always with Satan, there's always this inversion of what God does. The prophets of the Old Testament heard from the Lord and they repeated back. The prophets for Satan, the prophets for their idols, the prophets for the state will sit there and regurgitate back to you what they were told by the media. And they're so confident in what they say, aren't they? And they love to tell you how you're going to kill everyone if you don't wear a mask, if you don't social distance. You see them with their religious fervor. Remember during the quote unquote pandemic, which they're ginning up again, by the way, you would see them with their religious fervor. These are the same people that would be screaming, stone him back in the day. You're not wearing a mask. You're not social distancing. Are you trying to kill us? You saw videos. People film with their cell phone. There's somebody just going off on a rant and tirade on some stranger in a store because they're not standing by the arbitrary 6 foot apart, which the holy government has set down before them. It's idolatry. They might tell you they don't believe in a God, but they do. It's just a false God. And yet you see that longing is still there. They'll sit there and dismiss your true faith as some sort of silly following of fairy tales, and yet they themselves follow religious practices and they don't even realize it. In the Old Testament, one of the most detestable practices the people could do is, we touched on this, I believe, last week, this silly notion that the modern church puts out, like all sins are equal. And they're not. I don't think I got into that as far as I kind of wanted to. But it's one of these false notions that, like, you know, if you tell a fib, it's no different than if you kill somebody in God's eyes because you're still guilty of sin, as if those are two equal things. Now, one of the most detestable practices in the Old Testament is passing your children through the fire for Baal, passing your children through the fire. And if you've been listening to the show, you understand what that means. If you're not, if you're a new listener, if you're somebody who's just been, you know, casually strolling through, you read that and you might think that it was just some sort of ceremony. They literally burned their children alive. I have no idea how old their children were, but obviously they were born. They were infants. I don't know if there was an age limit. But they would burn their children alive. And usually this was followed, my understanding is usually while the children were screaming in agony being burned alive, they would have an orgy in the floor of the temple with that as background music. This is one of the most detestable things the people would do. And it's one of those things that always brought the wrath of God down upon them. This was such a, and you have to understand there's certain sins, you know, by God's grace through Christ, we're delivered from sin. But understand, there's some sins that just for your own spiritual self, they're harder to come back from. People cause their children, they burn their children alive in a demonic sacrifice. This seems to be something Satan is very intrinsic with the devil, because it's harder to come back from that. And you'll see it time and again, they would sacrifice their children to Baal. And why did they do that? They did it because it was believed if they did this, it would bring them wealth. It would bring them a better financial situation. They would get more money. They'd have a better harvest, so on and so forth. It would benefit them. Basically, it would benefit them financially. And there's just this, you know, like I say, that there's a common theme that Satan wants people to do that, because if you go that far, that's something that's pretty hard to come back from. You know, if you threw your child in a fire to be burned alive, you know, that's going to be something pretty difficult to come back from, no matter what. Now you fast forward today, and what do you have? You know where I'm going with this, and people want to look away, but we have to look at it for what it is. They may not throw them in the fire alive, but they go to a doctor and pay the doctor to reach up there and chop their children into bits and pieces, suck them out with a vacuum, and then sell the pieces for profit. It's the same thing. And likewise, the devil loves it because it's harder to come back from that. It's really hard to come back from that. And what is people's motivation when they do this? Whenever this debate comes up, what do they always say? Well, what about cases of rape? What about cases? They always throw out these hypotheticals that in reality are probably less than 1% of a chance of a, but they always throw them out there, right? What if a young girl is raped by her father incestuously and gets pregnant? You don't want her to be able to have an abortion, do you? Never mind that virtually never happens. It's less than 1% chance. I always throw these ridiculous hypotheticals. This is why I hate. I usually, when somebody wants me to deal with a hypothetical, I just blow them off because you already know they're coming from a disingenuous position. Oh yeah, well, what if a girl is raped by her father and gets an incestuous pregnancy against her will? You think she should carry that baby to term? You never want to get into these ridiculous arguments about hypotheticals because people can pull out, they can just keep going further and further and further out there and act like because of this thing that could happen 0.00000001% of the time, we have to excuse what's happening the 99.99999% of the time. And that 99.9991% of the time, it's because, well, I can't afford it. A baby right now would get in the way of my career. I've got a career. I went to college. I want to make money. I've got. It's the same reasoning as the Old Testament. It's going to bring me, it'll damage my financial. This is going to improve. My child sacrifice is going to improve my financial situation. It's literally the same thing. Whether you burn your child alive or reach in there and chop them up into bits while they're alive and suck the pieces out and sell them for a profit. It's the same thing. Now, you got to get one of the reasons this is so, I said, it's some things are harder to come back from than others. When a sin is hard to come back from, it's because one of the reasons is because you've got to face that. You repenting of your sins, confessing your sins. And I've said this before, it's not you have to stand up and announce to the world all your dirty laundry. In a way, that would be easier. You've got to get real with yourself. You have to confess to yourself why you've done the things you've done. And that is way harder than it sounds. It means you have to get 100% real with yourself. I did this. I chopped up my baby and let the doctor suck the pieces out and sell them to a company for research for a profit. On top of the money, I paid the doctor. I did this child sacrifice because I thought I could get more money. It would get in the way of me making more money. That's what a career is. I will be making money. You have to get real about that. And that is a very, very difficult thing to do. People always will want to make excuses. Well, I had my reasons. I was in a really bad place at the time. And I look, those are excuses. Those are your justifications. When you leave this world, all of those are going to be left behind. When you face God, when we all inevitably die, every justification is going to be left behind. You can't take it with you. You're going to stand, to put it in a figurative term, you're going to stand naked before the Lord. Nothing is going to be hidden. Moreover, you have to face those things then. It's going to be a lot easier if you face them now. As difficult as that may be, it's going to be a whole lot less of a shock than all that gets stripped away when you're standing before God. And now you have to look at yourself and all your ugliness. This is what confessing your sins is about. This is why it's important. You have to get real with yourself. And when you've gone so far, as the case we're talking, the example we're talking about today, obviously this is not the only thing we could be talking about, but the same principle applies. When you have to face yourself and be honest, I murdered my child. I sacrificed my child because I thought it would benefit me financially. That's a hard thing to do. It's really hard to look at yourself, internalize this, and not throw in a but I have an excuse. You got to get rid. That's why these things are so hard to come from. That's why Satan loves it. That's why Satan loves it, because when you go so far, then it's really hard to come back from that. It's much more difficult to come back from that than, say, certain other sins. I mean, just to stick with, you know, what we're using as an example here. If you went down to the honky tonk, if you went down to the bar on Saturday night and you wound up getting in a fight with an old boy, and in the course of this fight, you hit him, you hit this guy hard enough in the wrong place, and you killed this guy in a barroom fight. Is that going to be, that's going to be easier at some point to come back from than I murdered my child because I thought I could get a few bucks? I mean, the reality is you got in a barroom fight is probably over something nonsensical. You got in a barroom fight and you happened to kill this guy when you punched him in the temple a little too hard, or he fell down and hit his head on the edge of the pool table and he died. You know, the reality of that situation is going to be easier to come back from than, well, I went and paid a doctor, laid up there and let him chop my unborn child into bits. I let him chop my child into bits and suck it out so he could also peddle those pieces off to a research lab somewhere the baby didn't even get a burial. If I had to have a choice of what I'm going to come back from, and what I mean by come back from, I mean face it for what it is, be real about it, come to terms with it. You tell me which of those two situations is going to be easier to come back from. You have a death involved in both situations, but the reality of the two situations are two entirely different things. And this gets to the ridiculousness of the MCC, which I referenced last week, where they act like every sin is the same. If you lie to somebody, it's the same, you know, it's the same sin as if you murder your, you know, if you murder your child. In God's eyes, it's the same. You're sinful. No, it's not the same. Some things are going to be harder to come back from than others. That's why Satan loves it when you do these things. And when you get back down to a lot of these things in our world, it's idolatry. It's idolatry. It's a chasing a false god, whether it's some form of worshiping money or whatever. This is why time and time again, the Apostle Paul writes over and over again, stay away from idolatry. You know, he's not just talking about having a graven image or a little altar set up in the corner of your house. That's obvious. He's talking about, you have to bear in mind all of the insidious forms of idolatry that creep into your life. It's one of the reasons Jesus was always stressing about the rich. You know, it's harder for a rich man to get in the kingdom of God than pass through, you know, for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. It's not that there's something inherently evil about being rich. It's just that that's going to be 99.999. There we go with my percentages again of the time. That is when push comes to shove, that's going to be their God. That is their idol. When push comes to shove, that's going to be their idol. That's why he told the rich man who came to him and said, I want to follow in your way. I want to follow you. And he's like, well, you know, you've got the laws and the prophets and what Moses instructed you. And he proudly says, I've done all of those things since I was a child, teacher. And Jesus calls him out, doesn't he? Y'all know the story. Okay, good. Now sell everything you own, give it to the poor. Pick up your cross and follow me. Pick up your burden and then follow me. Oh, whoa. He went away sad. He said he followed the law. He followed the laws of Moses and the prophets his whole life, but he didn't. Because what does the law and the prophets say? Don't commit idolatry. He had idolatry in his life and he didn't even realize it. You see, he hadn't confessed it yet. He hadn't got real. If he had sat around before showing up for Jesus and been like, you know what? Money is a little too important to me, isn't it? Can I give up all of my money for the sake of the Lord? I'm fixing to go talk to this guy who I've heard he's the Son of God and he's doing all these miraculous things. I think I want to follow this guy. But do I have everything in order? Would that have been easier for him than to show up in front of Jesus, boastfully and foolishly say, I'm ready to follow you, and then get fronted out in front of everybody? There was no doubt a crowd of people hanging out and get fronted out in front of everybody, have to go away ashamed. You see, that's the difference between getting real with yourself and confessing your sins now while you got the chance versus showing up in the kingdom of God naked and everybody sees your ugliness and you have to look at yourself and go, oh my gosh, I had this many years of life and this is what I did with it. He says, I followed the prophets. I followed the laws of Moses since I was a child. You know he was so proud of himself. And Jesus said, you're an idolater. What? He didn't have to tell him he's an idolater. He demonstrated it. Sell everything you've got, give the money to the poor, and follow me. I can't give up my God of money, Lord Jesus. I can't do that. And he got fronted out in front of everybody. He showed up with all these justifications. I have followed the laws of Moses, the prophets, my whole life. He was confident. And he got basically rhetorically stripped naked in front of everybody and went off ashamed because he was an idolater. Anything you're going to put before the Lord that's more important to you than the Lord, that's an idol. That's why I say Paul warns over and over again, watch out. Don't be an idolater. Flee from idolatry. Flee from it. It can be more insidious than you think. Idols can creep into your life without you really even realizing. This guy went before Jesus because he was confident. He didn't even realize. He hadn't been following the prophets. He hadn't been following the laws handed down from Moses. He was an idolater. He was one of the big ten. It's not that there's something inherently evil about having money. It's when push comes to shove, that's more important to you than the Lord. It is one of the most base forms of idolatry. It is written in the book of Ecclesiastes, a great evil is a wealthy man who can't enjoy his wealth. He lays awake at night basically worrying about it. Somebody might take it. What could happen? I could lose my wealth. If this happened or this business deal goes wrong or I have a bad crop, I could lose my wealth. And he lays awake at night. He spends way more time worrying about that than he ever even thinks about the Lord. It's one of the more insidious ways idolatry can creep in. We could go on, but we need to go ahead. We need to go ahead and start wrapping things up. I actually had things I jotted down I thought we'd get into and just not gonna have time. Look around as an exercise. When you see people here in Clown World, you're not gonna lack. You know, and it doesn't have to be people you personally know, it can be, or you can just be people you observe on the internet or in society. But look a little closer. Instead of just dismissing these people as lunatics or you know, being obnoxious or quote unquote woke or whatever term, look. Stand back and look as an observer and look for their idols. You'll find them. If you can look hard enough, you'll ultimately find their idols. They'll claim they don't believe in any God, or they may claim to be agnostic. They may even claim to be a Christian believer. But if you look close enough, you usually can find their idols. For a lot of these people, it's the state. It's the government that is their idol. It's the media is their idol. It's some celebrity is their idol. You can find that a lot of times if you look. Just look. You'll find their idolatry. It's one of the sad states of the world we live in today. Next week, we'll no doubt even have more great Christian topics to discuss. I've gotten into this, you know, before I'd find a verse of scripture, we'd go over it. And we're no doubt going to do that. I've kind of shifted doing this kind of more of a general discussion thing, and honestly, for me personally, I'm enjoying it more. It's easier. I don't know. It's easier for me. I like just talking about these things. It's always my goal with this has been, you know, we discuss these things and hopefully it helps all of us in our day-to-day lives to live our day-to-day lives in a better manner and hopefully get closer to the Lord. That's my intention. Hopefully you get something out of it. We're going to go ahead and wrap up on that note, and I appreciate all of you stopping by. I hope you'll get a chance to check out all our great content here on Radio Alban. And of course, I hope you'll get a chance to stop by again next week for the Parish of the Patriots.